Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Magical Learning Podcast for this week. This week, we are talking to Mark Butler about radical self-care. Now, we all understand that self-care is becoming more and more important, but today we really break it down with a real expert. It's an amazing conversation. I feel like I took away not only stuff about self-care, but also about burnout, and Mark even talks about what he would do if he could redesign the classic 9-to-5 to help people. So enjoy and have a magical week. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Magical Learning Podcast for this week. For people that will be listening in, we have just braved some strange Zoom internet weather to get here, but we've arrived, and it's very exciting. So let's check in with everybody and see how their week's been, though. So, Jeanette, I might start with you. How has your week been?
Yeah, great, Jiz. So it's been 2 weeks since we actually got to record, because last week Graham and I were up at Willumbar, and at a place that had one bar of 3G, very deliberately. And so no email, no podcast, no nothing, which was divine. And then this week, a little bit of travel. And I'm going to say my most exciting thing happened yesterday, where I found in a shop a mini chainsaw that you can use for lopping low branches and stuff. And it's only this big. I should have actually grabbed it, and I might duck off and just bring it to put it on video. Amazing. So trees that would take me hours to just cut back, minutes. Delightful. Oh. And not heavy. So I'm just, that made my week. Because we've got at least 100 trees that need cutting back at our place. So that's so much better than the lopping things that we usually use. So best week.
Can I just say I'm really happy that this is an online session? Like, I'm just thinking of sitting in the same room as Danette with a chainsaw, just fills me with joy.
It's only the this big. It's not very big.
No bit of harm with that.
True. Anyway, I'll duck off and grab it so I can put it up on the video. Okay. I'll be back in 2 seconds.
That's good. Make sure you don't get any sort of haunted dolls. I feel like that's the exact kind of weapon. Mask. Exactly. That's the exact kind of. Oh, wow. Oh, we recommend people go to the Spotify and you can check out the video to see what this looks like. It looks kind of like a gun from Halo or something. It's pretty powerful. Oh, you're on mute.
You're on mute.
I don't think it really matters. I think the product placement alone is sufficient.
Yeah. And
the company whose name I will not mention owes us a lot of money right now.
No, this is beautiful safety features as well, and light enough for me to cart around while I'm pruning the trees and stuff. So best invention that I've come across in the last couple of weeks. Awesome.
And for anybody that's watching, there are other companies that provide chainsaws as well. Yes.
Thanks, Mark.
Any lawsuits.
That was this week's ML recommendation.
Absolutely.
We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors.
Absolutely. Graham, how are you going? Do you have any exciting toys or implements to show us this week?
Such a loaded question, Jess. I'm really well, thank you. I'm still trying to come to terms with the fact that the most exciting thing that Danette experienced this week was not me. So, you know, it's a good thing that the topic for today is what it is. I'm good, Jess. You know, we're at home. Had a little bit of rain yesterday. The chickens and guinea fowl are running around scaring each other, as they do. But it's been a good week. Nice to be home again.
Yeah, lovely. Merwillumba is beautiful. I hope you got as far as the Hut Distillery. Did you get to there? No? Oh, you missed
now it. You tell me.
Yeah. And what about the art gallery? Did you get up to the art gallery at all?
No, we hunkered down and read.
Amazing. Well, that's awesome. And the voice that you've been hearing, that's been sort of a bit doing a bit of a cameo, but now we can introduce you. Mark Butler, how has your week been?
Very good. Thanks, Jez. Hi, Danette. Hi, Graham. Lovely to be here with you folks. I've been traveling for the last few weeks, so this is my first week back in a long time, in a few weeks, and was really enjoyable, I have to say. There's been a bit of, I say housekeeping, but it's work-related housekeeping, so lots of catching up on stuff. I've been doing a couple of podcasts, and I've been filming a couple of video clips, and I'm doing some sort of online webinars and conferences and presentations with clients. It's been absolutely lovely. And to be able to do it standing still, you know, sort of in the same space for a little while. I live in the Northern Rivers, and I had forgotten that, you know, we don't need to sort of account for commuting whenever we're going anywhere. And I sometimes forget that when I travel to Sydney or Brisbane or Melbourne. And I think, oh, yeah, it's 5 minutes down the road. Nothing is 5 minutes down any road in any of the cities now. So I'm kind of learning. So fabulous week. It's been absolutely lovely. Working hard, but it feels nice. Nice being here.
Amazing, Mark. And I think that you've dropped a lot of crumbs there. That's exciting. The audience is going to be wanting to know a lot more about you. So, Mark, tell us, for people that may be being introduced to you for the first time, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, okay. So my name is Mark Butler. I am a moniker that sits uneasily on my shoulders. People call me a mental health expert. I think the Irish Catholic in me doesn't allow for, you know, such grandiose titles. But I've been a specialist in the mental health space for about 15 years. I've been in corporate world for about 25. Don't add those together and say he sounds all right for an 80-year-old. I'm not. They've kind of run side by side. I've been incredibly fortunate to be able to do that. So I've worked, as I say, in the clinical space around mental health and well-being, developing treatment programs, publishing some work, worked as a clinician for a number of years as well, clinical director of treatment facilities, developing programs for high risk populations like veterans with post-traumatic stress and substance abuse, and first responder teams working with people in recovery from long-term addiction, that sort of thing. So that combined then with the sort of corporate experience and the lived experience in burnout kind of led me down a path. I followed my nose. There was no real sort of plan behind it, but I segued before COVID, I segued into working with corporations and working with high performing teams in, under high pressure needed to deliver fast moving environments like the populations I was just talking about. And that was my background. So up until then, the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff, then became the fence at the top of the cliff and trying to prevent these issues. COVID came along and I got painted back into the sort of burnout space, if you like, and that's been where I've played for the last few years. Coming out of that again now and back working in my happy place, working with teams and working in sort of helping the best get better. That's essentially sort of where I'm at, and that's what I really enjoy doing, because we all know what it's like to work in fast moving environments now. There aren't slow ones really anymore. But there are high performing teams who used to perform really well and for various reasons aren't. You know, and that's the kind of work I do.
Amazing, amazing. Well, today you picked such a good topic, and I think that, you know, your experience on this is going to be perfect. And we're going to be talking about radical self-care. And I was going to ask you to get into it, but I think Danette's question tees us up really nicely for that. So I might throw to Danette, what was your question and why did you pick it?
So mine was exactly that. What is radical self-care, Mark? Because I'm sure some of the audience will be going, I've heard of self-care, but what is radical self-care?
Yeah. Oh, look, it's self-care 2.0 is probably one way to describe it. I think if we learned anything during COVID, we learned that, you know, we needed to lift our game. We needed to recognize that sort of the old guard sometimes isn't enough. And I'd heard of a concept called extreme self-care before. And it sounded interesting, but I wasn't a fan of the name because it kind of gives the connotation that self-care is a task and a chore. And we can't look at it like that. And if we learned anything through COVID, the conversation around mental well-being and mental health, which is the sort of space I've played in for a long time, came to the front. And so the stigma around mental ill health has started to drop away. There's a whole new one now with legislation around domestic and family violence and how the workplace treats it. If we thought there was a stigma around mental health, it is 10 times worse with domestic and family violence conversations. So we're not out of the woods yet. I digress. Radical self-care. To me, when we were in lockdown, etc., I realized that looking after sleep, diet, and exercise, yeah, that's the engine. Really important that we look at those. But there is a far wider conversation that needed to be had. And to my mind, making sure the engine is running with proper sleep, proper diet and exercise. And by diet, I don't mean just what we eat. It's everything we consume. Social media, shopping, internet, all of the things that we use as distractions. And so I set to looking at what I used to do when I worked in residential treatment centers. Somebody would come in that's, working through trauma or anxiety, depression, addiction, or anything, post-traumatic stress, anything like that. First and foremost, we looked at taking care of all of the basics, as I said, sleep, exercise, diet, etc. But then we really understood that to get the best out of someone, we need to look at all of the other areas of well-being that deserve attention on an ongoing basis and not just when something goes wrong. So I'm talking about, in my book, it's called Up Yours, a bit provocative, but it's an attention-grabbing name. It's called Up Yours, The Pursuit of Radical Self-Care. And by that, what I mean, oh God, this is a long answer, sorry, Danette. By that, I mean radical being sort of wide-ranging and thorough and sort of from the ground up, if that makes sense. So more than just the usual suspects. And so in the book, I tap into conversations that are very relevant, like burnout, what that looks like, what it is, what it isn't, how to care for ourselves and others when we experience it, how to look out for each other in a community, in a family, in a team at work. We talk about resilience, or I prefer the phrase buoyancy, because I think resilience is kind of seen as bouncing back from adversity, whereas buoyancy is we deal with it as it comes along and we're ready for it. So you know what I mean? So it's a bit like rising with the tide as opposed to being thrown a life belt. I talk about, then the book, I get into self-awareness, hugely important and something that doesn't get a great look in sometimes. So just around emotional intelligence, emotional awareness is hugely important. And we can talk about that in a little bit if you like. But I also then talk about how to work smarter, not harder. How to, what does emotional intelligence look like in terms of empathy and compassion and sympathy and the difference between all of those? And then, hugely importantly, we talk about self-compassion. How do we quieten the self-critic? How do we look after ourselves? And we can walk down that little back street if you want to as well in this conversation. And I'll preface it by saying I love the work of Dr. Kristen Neff, N-E-F-F, who is fabulous and a world leader in this. And I think she's the Brené Brown of self-compassion, whereas Brené Brown is around sort of vulnerability and shame, etc. They kind of live on a path. She's superb. And what she has to tell us about self-compassion and the self-critic, I think everybody needs to hear. And that kind of sums up. That's largely what the book is about. That's what radical is, more than just the usual suspects. Let's think outside the square.
Love it. Love it. What a great answer. And totally agree with Christine Neff. I've read some of her stuff. It's brilliant. So, yeah.
It's fabulous.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll let other people ask questions. Great answer, Mark. Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both so much. Great question. Great answer. Let's throw to Graham now. Graham, what was your question? Tell us a bit about why you chose it.
Who knows, Jess? Who knows, really? life is a mystery. Mark, well done. You've actually answered my question ahead of time, so I'm not sure whether you peaked. Okay. But I might just sort of frame it a little differently. So my question initially was, what's driving the need for radical self-care as opposed to just normal? But there are a couple of things that you mentioned in your answer for Danette. The self-awareness thing, I agree, is so important.
Yeah.
So important, and helping people, you know, develop their self-awareness and develop their EQ to the point where they can be aware a lot sooner, like before they, to use your analogy, before they jump the fence heading towards the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff, they're aware that that's what's likely to happen. I'd love to get your take on how do we get people to see self-care as a responsibility, not an opportunity?
In my experience, is give them a taste of it. Just get people to slow down and just see what's going on. And you can, like, you can do that in a day. You can do that in, you know, bite-sized pieces, if you like.
Yeah.
So as an example, self-awareness, when I talk about self-awareness, it's the beginning of a conversation into emotional awareness, if you like. Now, I'm aware that I talk about well-being and self-care, and I live in Byron Bay, sort of in the Northern Rivers, and people immediately assume that I'm going to be talking about chocolate and bath salts and, you know, candles and crystals kind of thing. I have a scientific background, and I dive a little deeper than that. Greatest respect to everybody who works in that space. I dive a little deeper. And when I talk about self-awareness, did you know that we are walking 10% faster than we were 25 years ago? And we're living in environments. If you're in a city, the noise you're experiencing and that you have to block out on a continual basis is three times what it was 25 years ago, right? So the sorts of distractions and the pace and speed at which we live and work doesn't leave a lot of time to sort of check in on ourselves. And yet at the same time, we try and sort of, we talk about, you know, listening to our gut feeling and acting on instinct and, you know, this whole sort of paralysis through analysis idea. If we spend too long working on a problem, we'll miss it. So we should go with our gut instinct. And usually people think that when we're talking gut instinct, we're thinking, what's our first thought? That's probably the right one. But there's something that's going on underneath that. And I would say to people, yeah, if you want to act on instinctive feelings, great, but you better check in and see what you're feeling first to make sure that what you're experiencing is right. Now, that sounds easier said than done, but in actual fact, it doesn't take a whole lot of time to practice it. And so when I'm talking to people, I make this statement. Again, this is going to sound sort of a bit flippant and a bit throwaway. But the front prefrontal cortex, the thinking part of the brain, I will say, is the last place to know what's going on, either within ourselves or outside of ourselves. People go, yeah, whatever. It really is. It is acting on the information it's receiving from all of these other sensory sort of signals that we get. So bearing that in mind, if I was to say to you that every action or every behavior that we take is underpinned by a feeling or an emotion or something like that, and every feeling or emotion that we experience is underpinned by a need or a want that we have for ourselves or from our environment. So, you know, if this is an audio, if people were able to see me now, you'd see me just making layers with my hands. So a need arises, creates a feeling, you know, so, and then that feeling creates an action. And the action is the cognitive thinking executive part. So we're following on what's needed and what we're experiencing. But very often we don't realize that what's gone on to create that sort of action in the first place. Kind of. Have you ever gone shopping when you're hungry and then you come home and you got three bags of chocolate and I completely forgot washing up liquid, right?
Not once ever, Mark.
Not once today.
Just to clarify. Ah,
exactly. Or, you know, this idea of being hangry. right? You know, have an argument with somebody, we better just get something to eat before we kill each other.
What's now terrifying me is the idea of somebody else who might be on this podcast with us, hangry with hand with chainsaw.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I've got to go and find my bike helmet.
You might need a bit more than that. I'd be putting sand in the petrol tank if I were you.
it's battery operated.
Oh, okay, that's worse. That's
yeah,
okay.
You're on your own,
Graham. I don't know what to do for you. You're on your own with that one.
Thanks, mate.
But yeah, so when I talk about self-awareness, I talk about that that idea of just emotional awareness. I think that's the first part of it. And what quickly follows from that then is emotional regulation. So that, you know, am I in control of my emotions or do they get the best of me? I can't find my keys. Do I just, you know, tot or do I roll on the floor, punching the ground with my fists? You know, these kind of responses to things that overwhelm us. As a kid as a young adult, I used to pride myself in the fact that I didn't lose my temper. Or if I did, it was very sudden and then I kind of stopped and reversed myself out of it. And I remember one time when I was doing my training to be a psychotherapist, and we did about 6 years work on ourselves before they ever let us loose in the public. And that's why I went with the psychotherapy idea. But I remember saying that to my supervisor / trainer. And I, you know, I prided myself on this. And I remember looking at him and he was kind of going, ooh. I said, what do you mean? Ooh, he goes, you're not allowed to get angry, are you? I said, no, I can get angry, but, you know, I forgive people really quickly. Oh, I wonder what that's about. What would happen if you stayed angry? And I had to think, actually, I've never tried it. I've got no idea. He goes, yeah, because you have a fear of abandonment and you have a fear. And suddenly it opened this Pandora's box. I said, Jesus, you're right. It doesn't feel safe to get angry. What's that about? So I would block a primary emotional response. And here's the interesting thing around anger. To my mind, if I'm speaking with somebody and they get angry, it's not what made you angry that interests me. In fact, it's not even that you got angry that interests me a great deal. The answer lies in what happened in that absolute split second, microsecond before you got angry and lost sort of control of that sort of emotion.
Yep.
And the answer will be in something to do with shame or vulnerability, etc. And when we realized that, God, I got angry. I didn't even feel it coming up. Suddenly I was raging with somebody and I never saw it coming. That's not what's interesting. What's interesting is that what actually did you feel in that split second before you got angry? You felt shame for some reason. And I wonder what that was. You know what I mean? And that's where your answer will be. And so if we can learn to tap into those sorts of feelings before they overwhelm us, there is a world going on that we've no idea about until we kind of get good at sitting with it. Overwhelming grief is the same. Sometimes we will block it out and we can't sit with it. The amazing thing is that 99 times out of 100, if we can sit in that space and just acknowledge it, and as Kristen Neff would say, this is the common human experience. There's 8 billion of us. There's maybe at best 80 different types of emotions, and you could boil them down to 2 or 3 anyway. But there's at best 80 kind of emotions across 8 billion people. Do we really think we're the only ones that's experiencing that kind of grief? We all have it. We all experience it. And when we acknowledge that this is part of the common human experience, it takes its power away. And if we can sit in that sort of whatever's causing us that overwhelming sadness and just tap into letting it be for even a few minutes can do. Maybe not grief sometimes, but anger certainly. And just tap into what's going on. A whole new world opens up to us. And it's the one that we learn, then we control our emotions, they don't control us, suddenly they're working for us. And by the way, emotions are never right or wrong, they just are. They're just a message, let them happen. Yep. You know, don't deny them, they're telling us something. And they're fleeting, actually. One exception, sadness lasts about 200 times longer than any other emotional experience. And that means it's telling us something.
Yeah,
tells us to look after ourselves.
The football team that we follow is pathetic and we need a new one.
Yeah, that's probably
it's a recurring theme for some of us.
Yeah, and if you sit with that, Graham, I'm not saying they'll start winning, but at least you'll come to terms with it yourself.
Yep. Yeah, I get that. Mark, thank you. Thank you. Love your response. Really appreciate it.
Sure.
Awesome. Awesome. Mark, I feel like we could ask you so many other questions on so many other topics. It's amazing. I might throw one more and then we'll grab some final thoughts. We'll have to have you back on for another podcast for sure.
Anytime, love to.
Awesome. Oh, I might go to mine because I was fascinated by this concept, which is if you could redesign the classic 9-to-5 for everybody that works in office jobs, what would be the first change you would make to better facilitate radical self-care?
Oh, big question. Where do I begin? Look, I think, can I mention it in the context of burnout, which is probably the biggest challenge to people's well-being in the workplace? Jennifer Moss has written a great book on burnout, and she writes articles for Harvard Business Review, etc. And in 2019, she made a great statement. This was pre-COVID, remember. She said, work-related burnout is an organizational problem. It's not a person problem. And whenever I have worked with organizations and they say, you know, our people are succumbing to overwhelming stress and all the rest, so we need you to come in and teach them resilience. right. And then when the team hears, oh, we have to do resilience training because they want to squeeze even more out of us. And no, if that was the motivation of the organization, I would probably walk away. And I would also say to anyone who does want to do some kind of resilience sort of self-supporting anti-fragile type training or buoyancy training, I would say it's actually a self-care thing. And what it is, it's a bit like going to the gym and pushing out an extra 2 push-ups so that you are ready in case something comes along that you need. It's about being sort of, you know, responding positively to the adversity that people experience. So with that in mind, how would I change the classic 9-to-5? I think there already is. I think this hybrid work that we now have has been an absolute godsend. Not a big fan of dragging everybody back to work. Do not bring people back to work to stare at a computer screen all day. They can do that anywhere. That's the first thing. I think the compromise is a hybrid workplace for organizations that are looking at the 4-day work week, which is a very interesting concept. And what we're discovering already is that people's sick leave and sort of personal leave has down by something like 44% is the most recent research. So organizations that think, well, I'm giving away a day, you're kind of not. What you're actually doing is creating a sense of camaraderie and cohesion that is very workable. You're not measuring sort of time, you're measuring results and output, etc. And you're saving yourself a whole lot of sick leave and personal leave, you've cut that in half. So you're really actually back to a 4.5-day week, aren't you? You know, when you look at it like that. So I think there are redesigns already happening. I love this idea that teams and leaders and organizations are now looking at results rather than sort of inputs, if you like. I think that's a good thing. Because it's also measurable, results still are results. And the best preventer of burnout is to give people autonomy and to give people the ability to sort of be self-directing, because there's a sense of pride in being allowed to do that. And we don't have to stand over people's shoulders. And the ones you do have to stand over, you'll cycle out of the business in time anyway. You know, so it really works. I think it works for everybody insofar as it can. There are high touch areas where, you know, you can't work from home. You have to be at the front line. I'm talking healthcare and hospitality probably in the main. But the classic 9-to-5, I think, is already shifting and for the better. I think the interesting thing, and look, I've been in the burnout space. That's kind of where I've done a lot of my work in recent times. Whereas now, as I say, I work with team performance. Again, team performance, not to be confused with team results. It's a different thing, right? So performance is how we work and how we sort of work well together. I think that has shifted, but there are, we still need to keep an eye on people who are working remotely full time because they tend to get a bit lost. Isolation, loneliness, huge problems. We know that younger generations are adverse to conflict. So rather than have a stand up argument with their boss, they just leave. And that's not good for everybody either. And also, the traditional view of burnout, as an example, is that it's too much work. And my experience in the last 12 months would suggest that we've kind of normalized having too much work now. We haven't been able to replace people in teams. So the workload is kind of, it's fallen on the few, if you like, and that's not good. But at the same time, we've kind of gotten so used to it now that it's quasi acceptable, except that it's not, because the new psychosocial hazards legislation says that you can't do that. We cannot do that anymore. So that's another sort of classic 9 to 5. Yeah, come on, everybody, let's get stuck in. We're going to have to do this. Maybe in the short term, but it's not a solution. And legally, we can't do that anymore anyway. So what would I change in all of this? I'm kind of sitting on the fence waiting to see where it falls. But if an organization wants to change how they operate, I think we really need to lift our game around how we look after our people. And it's not all just work-related stuff. You know, fruit on a Friday, those days are gone. You know, we need to do a little bit more than that. And I think the organizations that realize that are the ones that are being most successful. They're the ones that are attracting the best talent. And when you do that, people are kind of more inclined to stay. You know, the old adage, people don't leave companies, they leave bosses. Do you know what I mean? Or they leave to go with wherever the boss has gone. So that's another big point as well. Richard Branson said it first, and I worked for him 30 years ago, and even back then, the whole idea of, I don't care what time you start work or finish work, just as long as the work gets done, just do your own thing. But even he says, look after your people, the people look after the business. You don't have to sort of sit in on the business like that. And so if we sort of shift this idea that it's all work, I think we move a long way towards sort of being better able to take care of ourselves radically.
Love it.
Ground up.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Mark, for today's conversation. I might just grab quickly some final thoughts from the team. So, Jeanette, any final thoughts on today's conversation and radical self-care?
Totally love the whole conversation. We're definitely getting you back, Mark, because we could be talking for ages. This could be multiple podcasts, I suspect.
It feels unfinished, doesn't it? It does. Feels like there are more questions. Let's do it again. Absolutely.
Yeah. That'd be awesome. So just some of the things you shared. Like, I loved the whole radical self-care and that, you know, the holistic approach to it. So, it's not just a couple of areas. It's actually a whole stack of things. I was really fascinated with some of the stats you shared. So the fact that we're walking 10% faster than we were 25 years ago and three times the noise. Yeah. And so for even people to be aware of that, to go, how do I decompress to be able to get away from that? Graham and I are very blessed because we live on a farm where the only noise is the chickens and the guinea fowl, basically.
Beautiful.
Which is fabulous. But I think of everyone who's got, you know, a lot going on at home, a lot going on at work, and then all of these other things contributing to, they think they need to speed up, but actually the whole radical self-care, slowing down, et cetera. And I loved your bit about the ideas for improving the 9 to 5, because we are totally on board in our company in that already. We love that sort of stuff. So thank you so much. Can't wait till the next conversation.
My pleasure, Jeanette. Thank you very much indeed. And Jez, I've shared the ebook of my latest book, Up Yours. And anybody that's listening that wants to grab a copy of the ebook, I'm very, very happy for you to share it with them. Absolutely, go for it.
Fantastic.
It's a message. Do you know what I mean? I'm not looking to build an empire.
Well, that's awesome, Mark. If you jump on Spotify right now, we have a little question thing. You can send through your email address. We'll shoot that through straight to you. So that's so generous of you, Mark. We really appreciate that. I might grab Graham's final thoughts on today's conversation and radical self-care as well.
Wow. So, yeah, Mark, thank you. Amazing. And I don't know what the – Jez, maybe you can find this out. What is the record, the world record at the moment for the longest continuous podcast? Because we're probably going to kill that one. So much in there. One of the things you mentioned, when we were talking about burnout and the fact that the problem is an organizational problem, not a person problem. And it reminded me of something, I can't remember the name of the book or the author, but he was talking about this idea of cruel optimism. And there's a lot of this sort of belief in this self-help space that, you know, if you just practice self-care and have a positive outlook on things, then you'll be okay. But then you go back into an environment where you just get smashed.
Yeah.
So we're sort of setting ourselves up to fail. So many other things we could talk about, but thank you for sharing today. It's been fantastic. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Graham. Thank you very much indeed as well. And you, Jez. I'm very happy. Let's come back. Let's continue the conversation. There's so much to share.
And just before we let you go, Mark, I know you've got to head off, but I just wanted to grab a final thing. Any final thoughts you had on today's conversation or where people can reach out if they want to contact you?
Sure. Very simple, markbutler.com.au is my website, and my email address is mark@markbutler.com.au. And make sure it's .com.au or else your emails will end up with our Minister for Health here currently in Australia, because I get a few of his and I happily pass them on. And there's the markbutler.com in another a business in the US, and he's in incredibly patient with people reaching out looking for me when it's him. So it's .com.au. And look, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on, you know, all the social media stuff with the exception of TikTok. Final thought, just slow down, you know, catch a breath. You'd be surprised what happens when you do. You know, there's that great old Zen saying, everyone should spend 20 minutes in nature every day, unless you're really busy, in which case you should spend an hour. And I think that's a really nice one. And just, you know, catch your breath. Just look around and listen to the birds, unless you're in the city and put your headphones in because it's too noisy in there. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Mark. It's been a real pleasure. This podcast has been fantastic. To everybody that's listening, thanks so much for sharing and listening. All of Mark's contact details are going to be in the description. You can click right on them. We'll make sure it's the right ones there. And to everybody that's listening at home, have a magical week.